All right, you're in Minor Prophets. Quickly, Minor Prophets, get your notes out. We're starting in chapter 1. Hosea, chapter 1. We just got into verse 1. We'll start here and do the entire chapter, if not 3. Let's start with verse 1. The word of the Lord that came to Hosea, the son of Beeri, in the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, Hezekiah, kings of Judah, and in the days of Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel. So it's defining the period of time when he preached. And it goes on, the beginning of the word of the Lord by Hosea. And the Lord said unto Hosea, Go, take thee unto thee a wife of whoredoms, and children of whoredoms. For the land hath committed great whoredoms, departing from the Lord. So he went and took Gomer, the daughter of Diblaim, which conceived and bare him a son. And the Lord said unto him, Call his name Jezreel, for yet a little while, and I will avenge the blood of Jezreel upon the house of Jehu, and will cause to cease the kingdom of the house of Israel. What is God promising there? To stop the kingdom of Israel. To make it cease. To make it go away. And it will come to pass at that day that I will break the bow of Israel in the valley of Jezreel. We call it Armageddon today. Megiddo. And she conceived again and bare a daughter. And God said unto him, Call her name Lo-Ruhamah. For I will no more have mercy upon the house of Israel, but I will utterly take them away. But I will have mercy upon the house of Judah, and will save them by the Lord their God, and will not save them by bow, nor by sword, nor by battle, by horses, nor by horsemen. Now, when she had weaned Lo-Ruhamah, she conceived and bare a son again. Then said God, Call his name Lo-Ammi. For ye are not my people, and I will not be your God. Yet the number of the children of Israel shall be as the sand of the sea. Now that's a great thing, he says. Yet, you guys are going to number as the sand of the sea, which cannot be measured nor numbered. And it shall come to pass into the place where it was said unto them, Ye are not my people. There it shall be said unto them, Ye are now the sons of the living God. Then shall the children of Judah and the children of Israel be gathered together again, and appoint themselves one head, and they shall come up out of the land, for great shall be the day of Jezreel. Right down next to that, the word Armageddon. All right, number A, talking to Hosea, he's told to marry a prostitute. Take a whore as your wife. You're on, I have on page 7, 6 or 7. Marry a prostitute is A under your lesson for Hosea. Which means take a whore as your wife. What do the Irish call it? A harlot? What's the word for them? Normally they're called partners today. But it's a whore. Whoredom. It's a Bible word. God had called this nation of Israel in Abraham like a young man calls a woman to be his bride. Abraham had responded by faith. He loved God, he followed him, and he obeyed him. God's call to Abraham was a call away from false gods. Ur of the Chaldees was a place near Babylon that was full of idols. And God said, come out from there, and I want you to go to a place that I'll show you. So he called him away from false gods, away from the world. But 1,000 years later, the nation had stepped out on God and was not looking back anymore. They had become an adulterer. An adulterer, a whore. A whore, or a harlot, is a woman who by nature was unfaithful. I mean, she wasn't a one-time woman stepping out on him. That was how she lived. She lived constantly out in the town, constantly in men's laps and in men's bedrooms.
For the love of money or for the love of just the love of sin?
We're going to talk about it.
Okay.
A harlot is a lover of many, but yet a lover of none. God wanted to restore her to a lover of just one, of just him. That's what he wanted. But something has happened to the relationship between God and his wife Israel. God was very upset with Israel's unfaithfulness to him, as he would be, and as you would be. So God commanded Hosea to go find a harlot and marry her. What a thing, man. knowing she would be unfaithful. Why would God ask a man to marry somebody who's going to be unfaithful to him?
As a sign.
The prophets are asked to do some crazy things, man.
That's what you said last week. This one will lay down for
that's
weeks
right.
on his back, and then he
that's right.
turn over and all sorts of things.
That's right. So Weston, so sometimes God will ask the pastor, the preacher, the missionary to do some strange things. You go, why would somebody, I've read of missionaries who've gone to the Middle East and died. I mean, in the first year of their ministry there, they were killed. I've known of some people go and do some crazy things. Say, do you God believe God called them to do that? I don't know. But sometimes it just doesn't make sense, but God does it to show just how awful we are. He sent his son to the world to be slaughtered. I mean, what a wild thing. Why would I mean, I'd send him to go in there and take over and rule and reign. No, he came in and let them kill him. Yes, Weston.
But she would have been on the grill after, huh?
Of course. And yet, God used it to show that they had stepped out on God and had changed. God had not changed. They had. So he needed an illustration of an unfaithful woman.
Yeah, but he's not, would need not to go on against his own world there.
Nope. Nope. You have that's right, and but there are some times when God breaks his rules of what's proper and of propriety, and to show just how bad we are. Okay, he actually does do that, and sometimes God will allow the devil to ruin your day. You say, well, why would you do that? To show you that you've been ruining God's day for the last month.
And the days is 1,000 years.
Maybe 100
so
days.
So 11,000 years.
So, prophets do all kinds of strange... So God commanded Hosea to go find a harlot and marry her, knowing that she would be unfaithful to him. This was someone who had a track record of being unfaithful. Go and marry a whore, is what he's told to do. Don't go marry a nice girl and hope that she doesn't go bad. No, this is a girl who's already bad.
And God actually said that.
That's what we read.
To Hosea.
Yeah. Verse 2, the beginning of the word of the Lord to Hosea, and the Lord said unto Hosea, go take unto thee a wife of whoredoms. Take it out of the red light district. Go and find a girl sitting there on the side with her knee out and her skirt as up high as possible, lipstick on as red as can be, and she's winking at you, come and says, let's get married. Take a harlot and get married. All right, yeah, I have to take 6 Valium and call you in the morning. Oh, yeah, here he goes. Give me a...
Wait a minute, I'm sitting too close.
You're all going to get wet in a second. Okay. And yet he says, B, he says, yet love her with perfect love like Christ will love the church. He doesn't say treat her like a whore. He doesn't say treat her like a harlot. He says, marry her, which means do your duty as an honorable, faithful husband. You know, Christ loved the church when the church was unlovable. He loved you when you were ungodly. You think about that for a minute. Why did Hosea do this? To show us how God does it with us. So love her, because in the long run, Israel's going to become faithful, as we're going to see. Number C, prophets do all sorts of crazy things to get people's attention, like preach on the street out in front of bus stops. I've done that. Eat locusts out in the desert.
Did you do that?
I did do that. Run around naked for 3 years. I've never done that.
Yes.
But Ezekiel did. So now God must not only picture Israel's unfaithfulness, but he has to picture his own righteous judgments against their unfaithfulness. So he's pictured by Gomer having 3 children, Jezreel, Lohurama, and Loamma. And Eric, I can smell the gas from here. Why don't you turn it down to 1? I think we're out of gas.
Oh, down to 1?
We may have to shut it off here in a little
moment.
It is warm. It's nice. So Jezreel means scattering. That's what Jezreel means, scattering. It is. No, Jezreel, the valley of Jezreel is the valley of Megiddo. It is Armageddon.
Is there one of the nations called Guamo?
No. Oh, yes. Yeah, but you're dealing with way up in near Moscow.
Okay.
Yeah. Gog and Magog. Did you think Gomer? Oh my goodness, I can't remember if Gomer is a nation. It is a nation, yes, in Genesis chapter 10. Yeah. So Jezreel means scattering. Number B, Lo-Ruhama means no more mercy. And Lo-Ammi means not my people. So, God's going to scatter them. not have any more mercy with them, and going to stop them from being his own people. He's going to disown them.
But does he?
Yes, he does. Now, the promise of a restored future, Israel, verse 10:11, Israel will one day exceed numbering, just like was promised to Abraham. Even though disowned and divorced by God, they're still going to be restored. Even though here's your answer, no longer the people of God, one day they will become again the people of God.
God disowned them. Did he? For 2,000 years?
Not for 2,000 years, no, but for a while.
Like, until they caught yet, that's what I meant.
No.
No?
No, he disowned them. This was before Jesus came.
Oh,
okay, it was a period of time. They actually got right about 200 years before Jesus came. All right, they actually were back in the land. They were occupied by the Romans, but they were the Pharisees had done a good job getting people back, hearing, reading, believing the Bible. Yes.
And this was it. Are they on about the 2,000 years as well? They all come from the land. Also, this was it.
It is the scattering of the northern 10 tribes right now. This is about the 10 tribes, Naphtali, Asher, all the different, not Judah or Benjamin, but the other 10 tribes. They're totally driven out of the land, and they've never been back.
So I think
they're still out of the land.
So the northern book of Hosea, it's just about, it's all this time before Jesus. What happened?
No, you're... It's got two applications. It's short term and long term. The 10 tribes are going to be scattered and not God's people to this day.
Yeah.
Okay. But they will one day be brought back, and they will be at during the tribulation, and the defining moment will be at the Battle of Armageddon. Okay. Complicated for me to try to explain briefly. Let me go on here. Even though they were no longer the people of God, one day they will again become the people of God through the new birth. But they must become as children. God used children and their names to show what Israel had become, but it is through children and through childhood that God would restore the nation. They will again become a unified nation, the nation of Israel. We've talked about Mediterranean Sea. You have basically Israel, Judah down here. Under what king did the northern Israel
Jeroboam.
Part and Judah split? Jeroboam is not the right answer.
Rehoboam.
Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, split the thing, and Jeroboam became the king of northern Israel. But their split, their division, never got restored. It never got fixed till to this day. But there is coming a day where, and this used to be known all as Israel. Okay? But what do these people down here like to be called? Do you remember what they like to be called?
Jews.
Okay? Meaning that they were faithful, they were of Judah.
They still call themselves Israel
today. They do indeed. It is still the nation of Israel, but there's a lot of, when they named their nation in 1948, they had so many arguments. Because they knew the name Israel was not proper yet. They were not a people yet. So they wanted to call themselves Judah. And there was a lot of heated arguments by all the Jews trying to define what they were going to call themselves. They finally settled with Israel because they know they will be unified again. Okay? But the point is, we read, because Hosea says, they will be my people again. And Israel, not Judah, not the two southern tribes, but all of them will be restored. Quickly. Yes, because Ephraim's up here. Yeah. Ephraim's in the north. So sometimes synonymous, you have an area up here called Samaria, Sam and Ephraim down here. So northern Israel sometimes referred to from one headquarters of influence, Samaria, and another tribe that really wickedly influenced Israel, which was in Ephraim.
So are they still divided to this day in Israel?
They're not divided. They don't know who's who. They cannot genetically prove I'm of the tribe of Reuben, or I'm of the tribe of Dan, or I'm the tribe of Kathy, or I'm of the tribe of Graham.
And does God say that he will reunite them all with knowing who they are in the end?
As we read verse 10, yet the number of the children of Israel shall be as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered. Then, verse 11, then shall the children of Judah and the children of Israel be gathered together. So they're going to be reunited as one nation again, and you'll be able to tell, I'm of Judah, I'm of Benjamin, I'm of... So that's DNA genetics coming up. Somebody's going to be able to pinpoint you're of this descendant. Yes?
Did that happen before then, or they didn't know who they were, what they were? When I'm thinking about Jeremiah, when they read it out, they took all the names.
There were people who could not prove. That's right. There were people who could not prove their lineage, and there were people who could, not genetically, but they could say, "My father is so and so, and his father is so and so." Oh, you're of the tribe of. They could by genealogy.
But so some people didn't really know who they were until they went.
They were not allowed to come in, and without the Urim and Thummim, which means that the high priest would be able to ask God, "Show me, is this person in or out?" Through the Urim and Thummim.
That's in Jeremiah that or in
No, it's not Jeremiah, that's in Nehemiah or Ezra.
Yeah, might be Ezra. I was just thinking about Jeremiah. Remember they had the book open and work out who was of what tribe? No, wasn't that Jeremiah?
Ezra.
Oh yeah.
No, I was just saying that they kept census.
They kept very different. First Chronicles, Second Chronicles are all names to make sure people were of the right tribe.
They didn't do it by genetics.
Yeah, they did.
About the Levites today.
What about them?
Well, they have the priesthood already for...
They have people who are doing the role of the Levite.
Right.
They're Jews, but they have no idea whether they're Levites or not. They're just doing the work of a Levite. Where'd we leave off? Okay, so, B, the promise restored, already going through that. Number four, they will become a unified nation again, gathered together as one, shall appoint or choose one head or shepherd. I wonder who they're going to choose. It's going to be Jesus. Shall come up out of the land, which is resurrections. You need to know that verse where it says, verse 11, then shall the children of Israel and the children of Judah and children of Israel shall be gathered together and appoint to themselves one head, and they shall come up out of the land. Isn't that description? Come up out of the land? That's a resurrection. That's coming up out of the grave. That's the way it's described. Now you think, well, it comes up out of all the different countries. You want to believe that all you want. This book is prophetic about a resurrection of the nation of Israel. Yes.
But what time is this?
In the tribulation.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, when I'm reading Hosea, to me, you're reading really about the end of time.
That's right. But some of it does come true before the coming of the Messiah.
Okay.
So, resurrection number 7, all will happen at the great day of Jezreel. Jezreel. Armageddon. Or at least the time of Armageddon, which is the tribulation. Jezreel and Armageddon. Let's call back to God. Let's look at chapter 2, verse 1. We got, Andrew, we got really delayed. We got into some deep questions on Genesis chapter 1. We only did 5 verses. We're still swimming.
Chapter 1 there.
Yes. You sure may.
Verse 10 there. The number of the children of Israel should be as the sign of the feet, and it says, in the place, to come to pass in the place where it was said unto them, ye are not my people, there shall be said unto them, ye are the sons of the living God. I thought that was about the Gentiles, but here it's for Israel.
It's used both. It's used both. Paul uses it and applies it to the Gentiles as well. Because if God is able to disown, you have to understand a little bit about the way Gentiles are seen by God, and how Jews are seen by God. Abraham was a Jew or Gentile?
Gentile.
He is a Gentile. He is descendants of the first people of God. They are his descendants. So you have Gentile nations. That's all you have until Abraham, correct? All right. So God takes a branch, and to Abraham you have Israel. You have a divorce and a disowning, and then you have the restoration. But something with the Gentiles, a long time ago, there was a break between God and the Gentiles. That later on will be a restoration of the Gentiles. And that restoration is through Christ taking the wall of partition that divides the Gentiles from Israel, and breaking that down, so now I come in under the same blessing of... I never get in under, I as a Gentile, don't get into God through a back door, I come in through the Jews. I come in through the promise made to Abraham, and even through Hosea, to the Jews. So verses that apply to the Jews can apply to a Gentile when a Gentile trusts the God of the Jews. Does that make sense, Barry?
Yep.
All right, Tony.
Can you explain to me about the resurrection that we read of in Matthew 27, verses 52 and 53, please?
Very briefly, that is a resurrection that takes place at Christ's resurrection. The rocks are all split, and it is a resurrection of all the Old Testament believers.
Okay.
That go up with him at his ascension. Because nobody gets to heaven until he gets there. Correct?
Is that the first resurrection?
No, sir.
It's not.
No, there are plenty of resurrections. I guess I don't know what is confusing me.
I talked to you about it in my own time.
Okay, it is kind of complicated. Weston.
No, it's okay, it's okay.
All right, thank you. Verse 1, chapter 2. Say ye unto your brethren, Ami. Now notice, did you see the lo Ami in verse 9? Of chapter 1, verse 9. Lo means not or no. And yet here, say ye to your brethren, Ami. And to your sisters, Ruhama. What's he saying? Hey, let's get back. Plead with your mother. Who's the mother? Gomer.
Gomer.
But is actually who? The nation of Israel. The top 10 tribes. Plead with your mother. Plead. For she is not my wife. Neither am I her husband anymore. Let her therefore put away her whoredoms out of her sight. And her adulteries from between her breasts. Lest I strip her naked. And set her as in the day that she was born. And we say naked is the day you were born. That's where it comes from. And make her as a wilderness. I mean, just make her a mess and set her like a dry land and slay her with thirst. I'm just going to abandon her. And I will not have mercy upon her children, for they be the children of whoredoms. For their mother hath played the harlot. She hath conceived them. She that conceived them hath done shamefully. For she said, I will go after my lovers that give me my bread and my water. My wool and my flax, mine oil and my drink. I'm going after those who make me happy and keep me happy. Supply my wants and my every need. materialism. Therefore, behold, God says, I will hedge up thy way with horns. I'll make it hard on you. And make a wall that she shall not find her old paths. And she shall follow after her lovers, but she shall not overtake them. She shall seek them, but shall not find them. Then shall she say, I will go and return to my first husband. For then was it better with me than now. For she did not know that I gave her corn and wine and oil and multiplied her silver and gold, which they prepared for Baal. It was me who was always taking care of her, and yet she never realized it. Therefore will I return and take away my corn in the time thereof, and my wine in the season thereof, and will recover my wool and my flax given to cover her nakedness. And I will discover her lewdness in the sight of her lovers, and none shall deliver her out of my hand. Who's he talking as? As a husband who's been stepped out on. I will also cause all her mirth to cease, her feast days and her new moons, and her Sabbaths and all her solemn feasts. And I will destroy her vines and her fig trees, whereof she hath said, these are my rewards that my lovers gave me. And I will make them a forest, and the beasts of the field shall eat them. And I will visit upon her the days of Balaam, wherein she burned incense to them. And she decked herself with her earrings and her jewels, and she went after her lovers, and they forgot me, saith the Lord. So the girl who says she's saved and she goes out on Friday night looking for a lover, she does not know God and has forgotten God. Therefore, behold, I will allure her. Aren't you glad? Watch this. And bring her into the wilderness and speak comfortably unto her. That is before he has to judge. And I will give her vineyards from thence and the valley of Achor for a door of hope. That's a good... That'll preach. God will make a way that you can go through for hope. And she shall sing there, as in the days of her youth, as in the days when she came up out of the land of Egypt. And it shall be at that day, saith the Lord, that thou shalt call me Ishi, and she shall call me no more Baali. For I will take away the names of Balaam out of her mouth, and they shall no more be remembered by their name. And in that day will I make a covenant for them with the beasts of the field, and with the fowls of heaven, and with the creeping things of the ground. And I will break the bow and the sword and the battle out of the earth, and will make them to lie down safely. And I will betroth thee unto me forever. Yea, I will betroth thee unto me in righteousness and in judgment and in loving kindness and in mercies. I will even betroth thee unto me in faithfulness, and thou shalt know the Lord. And it shall come to pass in that day, notice those three words showing up, I will hear, saith the Lord, I will hear the heavens, and they shall hear the earth. The earth shall hear the corn, and the wine, and the oil, and they shall hear Jezreel. And I will sow her unto me in the earth, and I will have mercy upon her that had not obtained mercy. And I will say unto them which were not my people, Thou art my people. And they shall say, Thou art my God. Now, you're looking at chapter 2. You're looking at God's call for them to come back. God pleads to be my people again. Come, obtain mercy. Most everybody wants the blessings of God. You better ask for God's mercy first. What is the publican pray for? And they're standing downwind from the Pharisee there in Luke chapter 18. What is he praying? God, have mercy on me, a sinner. That's the first and greatest prayer you can pray. Not, dear God, please bless me, bless my wife, bless my family, bless my preacher. You better pray for mercy. Yes, Sir Weston.
Well, it's just that, when you're reading the doubt, it's like, I know there's no contradictions in the Bible, but the New Testament, like, God said he now leave, not forsake you.
Right.
So, you know, but he leaves and forsakes his people here.
Mm.
Well, I know I did leave him.
Yes.
But
okay.
Even though I go backslide, he still never leaves me enough to save me.
I wanted to bring this up, and it's very complicated, but let me try to make it short. When Jesus speaks in Revelation chapter 2 and 3, he speaks to the church at such and such a place, the church of such and such. He's not speaking to individuals, correct? And he says to a church, I will take away your lamp. I'll take away your influence. I'll take away your power. He's speaking to a church, not to individuals. Here, he's speaking to the nation that he had married. He had a covenant with a group of people, not individuals. And that nation he divorces. He says, I have nothing to do with you. These are the same people that go away into Babylon. And guess who you find in Babylon? Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, Daniel, Jeremiah. So he doesn't take his mercy away from those who are right with God. And he doesn't divorce them. But this nation was totally, they weren't just backslid. This was a nation that was lost. And God says, as the nation, I divorce you. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but okay. not
at the personal level, and not, he never divorces somebody who is following him and his children. Yes?
It's more like the Jews, when they were went to Babylon, they were comfortable there and they didn't want to come back.
They became comfortable,
yeah,
yes.
They didn't want to come back. I just think about clear, do God want all the Jews to be back in Israel from all the nations? Or see, you think the Jews now in America, they won't come back because they're kind of comfortable there, and there's millions of them over there, so I know in 1911 or something, the Jews are warned to go back, aren't they, before World War II happened.
World War One.
So the law of Jews kind of persecution, like he's doing in Russia now.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
They're just wondering about America. Is the law going to let something happen there?
To force them back, yes, yeah. Yes. And it's called the Antichrist. He's going to hunt them down, and they're going to run. Actually, they're going to flee to an area called Selah or Petra. And there, they're going to hide from the Antichrist, who's going to send a flood after them.
Yeah.
And the earth's going to open up and protect God's people. But they have to go back to the land. That's yes, because that's the only place they're going to get saved. They're not going to get saved in Wall Street in New York City or High Street over in England. They've got to go back and run for their lives once again.
So do the Lord want the Jews all over the world
to go home?
No, to go home.
Yes.
So,
but we shouldn't send them there. Go home, Jew. Don't do this.
So, I know, in the tribulation days, the Antichrist will send the tribulation. He's going to go after the Jews in Israel.
That's right.
And they're going to have to run to Petra, whatever places.
Yes.
But I'm saying, will the law, is the law going, for America, for instance, there will a lot of people saying America's not mentioned in the Bible and all that.
Right.
So is the law going to let something happen in America, for example, so then Jews could go back?
Sure.
Soon, like,
sure. I believe that. I know that he's been doing that. Yeah. But, you know, whatever happens right now is for the Jews.
Mm.
Okay. When God allowed Caesar to have this idea to tax the whole world, it was to get his son in a womb from Nazareth down to Bethlehem. Mm. He taxed the whole world to shove one family 60 miles.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he'll work everything out so that so the Jews are back in Israel and they're running from the Antichrist. Because that's how he works, he says. That's the only way they'll get saved. All right? So we can't keep going. We better stay in this, okay?
Okay.
All right. He says, be my wife again. Israel was no longer God's wife, not anymore. Adultery, is it yes or no? Is that grounds for divorce?
Yes.
Yes, it is.
Is there any grounds for divorce?
It is dissolution of the bond of marriage. Well, no, fornication is.
Oh,
yeah. But fornication is homosexuality.
Right.
It is any form of sexual sin that is destructive. So when somebody, say you're married to somebody, and that person comes out and says, I'm homosexual, I don't want to be married with you. Well, then you are right to say, listen, bye-bye, I really don't want to be married to a lesbian. So that is grounds for divorce, yes.
Well, I know Jesus said that, no, man, was it?
No, if they want out.
Yeah, but then Jesus said, well, God is joined together, let no man.
That's right.
Have a son,
that's right. But what if they want out?
Yeah, but it's not what they want, like.
No, it's not true.
Them out, it's them leaving.
Oh, yeah, I understand that, like. I understand that, but they're saying now, it's one flesh, isn't it?
They are one flesh.
Yeah.
But they can't, listen, the Bible says, except for fornication. So if somebody is out playing the whore or doing homosexuality, and you don't know what anybody's doing today, here you've got a girl and you're married, and all of a sudden she's out every Friday night with girls and guys, and she comes home, you say, listen, this is not going to go any further.
I know, but if you're reading Hosea, are we not supposed to be like that?
Like what?
Like God.
And God divorces him.
Well, I
you're not my wife anymore. You're not my people anymore. But I want you back. He goes after her. And that's the truth about a Christian. A Christian never gives up and says, I'm going to try to get her back. Now, if she doesn't come back, you're free to remarry. But if you can, you first must pursue and pursue and pursue, like Christ pursued us.
Okay?
Yeah. He says, put away the whoredoms out of your sight, completely away from you. You should never have anything around that reminds you of previous lovers. I mean, you've got 15 girlfriends in your past, and you get married, you know what your wife's going to ask? Burn the letters.
Yeah.
Don't keep anything around. Idols, riches, you didn't have anything. Anything that you may covet, covetousness is idolatry. So why did Gomer leave him? She left for a man who could satisfy her fondness for luxury. And this is a mirror of Israel's spiritual problem. Israel was moved by greed and lust for the things of the world, and they soon forget God. You got to be careful. When things go well, you will quickly forget God.
Who's Gomer?
Who is Gomer? She was a whore.
Where does it say her name?
Chapter 1.
Go, and so I married a woman named Gomer. Didn't you see that?
Yeah.
Verse 3. So I went and took Gomer, the daughter of Diblaim. Are you with me? We can tell. Where'd Gomer come from?
Where's Gomer? Did you read the wrong line?
You know what everybody's saying, Barry? I'm glad he asked that because. So why did she leave? She left for a man who could better satisfy her thunder for luxury. He was a mirror of God, of Israel's spiritual problem. Number 2, or else God, the husband, will have to judge. There's a murder in a family. You know, had the right to seek revenge, the other members of that family. And if a woman stepped out on her husband, if a man stepped out on that, on his wife, who had first right to stone him? That's it.
What's the feeling? It's all
the husband.
We see that's why we see in the New Testament why that's why Joe's about to put away Mary.
Yep, because people would have stoned. He loved her. He could not bring her to the public eye, and yeah, because it was. Listen, marriage is so important. Yes, sir.
Well, was that long old Joseph?
It wasn't wrong. No, it was a way out. It was a way out. He loved her.
What did God want, Nick?
No. It's not what God loves. As a matter of fact, you know, very rarely do you find anybody being stoned.
Right.
It was a law. This was justice. But you didn't have to carry it out. Just like any judge knows, here comes somebody up there and they've done a crime. But you look and say, let's show them mercy. God says, I would have mercy and not sacrifice. I want you to learn. This is what the Lord doth require of thee. But to love mercy and to walk humbly with thy God. I forget the first one. But to do justly. God must have justice. But to love mercy and to walk humbly with thy God. You've got to have that attitude. Because if you go around, can you imagine what life would be like if everybody was like, you cross the street without a light. Whip them right there in front of everybody. Can you imagine carrying out every one of the laws exactly all the time? We would all be crucified.
Yeah, I understand. But was there a law there like that? She was supposed to be stoned.
No, she could be stoned.
But was there a law? What was the law concerning that? Like?
The law was, it gave the parents the right of a rebellious child who was out a drunkard and was committing fornication and going around bringing bad testimony to the nation and become an idolater. The parents were to stone him.
Mm.
But it was not carried out because have mercy. All right? Only do it for the worst of cases is what it's held for. All right? I believe in capital punishment, but I believe it in the worst of cases, obviously.
Can I ask you a question there?
Yes, sir.
Does it tell us anywhere in the Old Testament how God felt or God's views were on that particular punishment of being stoned?
Yeah, read Exodus. About 15 times God says, stone them dead.
Okay.
But he did not say, and you better do it every time. He turns around and he said, but watch their attitude. Watch your own attitude. Because you don't want to just go around having self-righteousness, going around judging everybody. God did say, let me say this. It was not for the people to go around stoning everybody. It was according to a judge system. People were brought before the judges. They evaluated circumstances. They evaluated, was he doing it in self-defense? Was this a once-off adultery? Was it a stupid thing? Does the husband still love her? Can they be reconciled? But if it was a leader, say it was the Taoiseach or the Taoiseach's wife or something, God said, stone him because that person influences everybody. And so it was, but don't just do it for the leaders. Even the Joe Soaps on the street need to know how serious marriage is. We're kind of off onto a side issue of, you know, how God views some crimes, but he saw it as worthy of death.
But and isn't that breaking one of his laws then in his commandments there, thou shalt not commit murder?
Nope. That's on a personal basis, but every one of those things, when you're a government official, you must murder. If somebody comes into your land and starts killing and raping and pillaging, you kill them back. So that is what the role of government is. Watch this. Go to Romans chapter 13.
It's not really murder, it's execution, isn't it?
That's right. It is not murder. Murder is you going out and killing somebody for their possessions or whatever. But we're talking about justice. We're talking about capital punishment for a crime. Romans chapter 13. Verse 1, let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. The powers that be are even ordained of God. God put them in power. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power, actually is resisting the ordinance of God, and they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. God's against you. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Wilt thou not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of your authorities. For he is a minister of God to thee for good, but if thou do that which is evil, be afraid. For he beareth not the... What's the next word? So people in government have to have teeth. They have to have the ability to take life. Because you can't just put people in prison all day, all night, for years and years, and pay for the thing when somebody has done a crime that needs to be matched with punishment. And if somebody has killed somebody, Genesis chapter 9, and even in Jesus' day, the punishment must match the crime, or else people will disown justice and say, there is no justice here. In simple terms, we think the murder of a guarda, that's bad enough. But I say the murder of an elderly person, I say the murder of a child. If you know, if we only allocate murder to a certain number of people, they're only the ones worthy of being killed. God says, no, if it ever happens and it's not by accident, it's not manslaughter, if it's premeditated, their life should be taken. There are extenuating circumstances. You say, well, do we have to? Can we give mercy? But you do not take away the law of capital punishment in order thinking that you're being kind. People need to know that somebody kills somebody, somebody blows up and kills 23 people in Noma, that person needs to be caught and they need to be killed. They don't need to be in prison for the rest of their life. That's the Bible. Somebody who planned the Oma bombing, they still haven't found him. But if they ever do, he should die. I believe that.
But a lot of people as well, you know, they kind of look at when Jesus said, let him who will sin cast the first stone, and they go, oh, see, Jesus said, you know, you don't punish the system, doesn't there? But Jesus was dealing with a mob.
That's right. He wasn't dealing with the government. He wasn't dealing with judges who were supposed to say, let's look at the evidence before we make judgment. See, the judge is supposed to carry out the execution of the law, not people. People aren't going around saying, who can I hit today?
So punishment, I understand, hitting the crime.
Mm-hmm.
Taking somebody's life, I don't, because, and I know where you're coming from, it, and I don't want to delay it, and I talked to you about it my own time. It's something I'm going to have to research myself, because it just doesn't make sense to me at the moment. But I will research
only because you think that the taking of a second life is not equal to the taking of the first life. And I'm telling you, until we take the value of the first life that has been murdered.
But isn't that revenge then?
No, it's justice. If you can understand, God doesn't even stop with murder.
But can there not be justice without taking somebody's life?
Oh, yes. There can be justice if there's mercy. If the person, for example, say I have a daughter, and I mean, I hate using illustrations because sometimes it's very painful to even think about. But say I have a daughter and she's murdered by some jerk who crawls into our house when we're not there or whatever. And she's murdered. She's raped and she's murdered. And that guy, I could find it in myself to have mercy and say, no, I don't want him to die. Okay? I could. I probably wouldn't. But that's not revenge. That's justice. Somebody has vilely taken a life. And that person should not be allowed to live. And until you put it in, actually, instead of going, well, we heard about those people being bombed or those people way out there. No, make it yours. Make it your daughter, your son. And then realize, now I understand why God says justice. And it has to be equal to the crime. So that person's not allowed to ever do that again. That person's not allowed to go out on the street after 7 years. That person has to pay for that crime so the people can go, all right, we can trust the government. We can trust that justice will be served. Now, if a person says, you know, I don't want that. And there have been plenty of people up in the north who have said, I don't want retribution for this crime against my family member. And those people ask for mercy. And I raise my hand saying, better men than me. And that's fine. But don't say it all the time and take away the teeth from government. They have to have the ability. We got to keep going, but they have to have the ability to use that sword. Yes, sir.
Just one more thing, it's in my head. But it's not up to man to judge.
It most certainly is. God gave it to the government. He bears a sword for a purpose.
But to take someone's life.
If they have done a crime equal of that. Yes.
So God has given that
permission. And that's we're not taking this on ourselves out of revenge. This is justice, and that's when you learn justice. Dan.
Well, God's the one that said, if innocent blood is shed, then you shed that blood.
That's right.
So it's
we'll get to that in Genesis chapter 9 at the beginning.
Says, you know, I feel bad for you. I forgive you. That might clear them and their own conscience toward that person, but the law still stands.
Yes.
That this is the punishment for that crime.
That's right.
That's why we're a nation of laws.
Yeah, amen. We got to have laws, not just go by feelings, and we don't let mobs go around and enacting the laws. It is through a court system. Yes.
Just last one. Do you know the woman caught in adultery, right?
Yes.
There are Hamasi, the Honor, right, and the fellow should be caught as well. But should they have been brought up before, like, whoever judged them that time?
The woman should have, but she shouldn't have been the only one. Who else should have been there?
Sorry,
the man. But who should have brought them?
Well, I know. Okay, Jesus.
The man's wife should have brought them, but this mob went and probably orchestrated it all, got the girl to get the guy's attention and lured him into a tent so they could grab her and let the guy.
Yeah.
But you see, if it was the wife bringing the man to the court, done. But this was a mob saying, let's use this to ruin Jesus.
There was no court.
There was
no Jewish.
Oh, there was, most certainly was. What's they call it? The front of the gate. There were elders sitting at the gate every day. That's where the courts were. Out in public, everybody evaluated, and the men
who were the Romans in charge.
Well, if they brought it, if it was somebody worthy of death, then they had to bring him to the Romans to say, this person is worthy of death.
We want you to put an adulterer to death, though,
would they? They put two thieves to death?
Yeah, but like a thievery against the Romans.
Maybe. I have no idea. I don't know what the word. But the point is, they if it was a crime for anything that they couldn't carry out, they would have brought it to the Romans. We've got to stop.
Yeah, no, I didn't ask a question yet. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
She was caught in the dog January. Okay?
Yes. Yes.
But Jesus forgave her. But she should have still been stoned, yeah?
Who's got the
adultery? If we don't know if the man had a wife who was going to bring it up to court. If the woman, if the man's wife, again, we have a man there.
Yeah, but she was caught.
She's just a harlot.
I know.
She's not, as far as I know, she's not married.
But she's caught in adultery.
Correct.
Fornication.
That's right.
Okay, because Jesus forgave her.
That's right.
Okay.
If anybody who was part of those who, Jesus is not part of the family. You see, I don't believe the government should be going, watch this. I don't believe the government should be going and finding out what you're doing wrong. But if I find out that my wife has done something wrong, I bring her to court. Mm. And if that man's wife wanted to bring him and that other woman to court, fair dues. They never did. If that woman was caught in adultery, if she was married, if he wanted to bring her to court, that's a whole other thing, and that would have happened. But Jesus just said, I'm not going to judge you. And he, being God, said, go and sin no more. You can be changed now. And he went on. She may still have to face the music. He didn't say, I don't believe anybody should judge this woman. Never said that. He said, nobody seems to be judging you. Neither do I. That's all that was dealt with so that you can realize, you know, God can forgive and Jesus can change. That's the truth. Not that the law was changed or overruled. The law could still be brought to bear against her. All right?
Yeah, it's just that, like, when Jesus came, it's like, I know it's probably different, but it says that he came to go away the cross to bring in the second, whatever, like, well, like, it seems that... Like,
only ceremonies.
Yeah, but it seems when the church came up that all them things were done away with, they put, like, you know, judging the blood flows and all that, like, but, like, you see Paul, there was someone in the church, got caught with his father's mother or something like that.
Yep.
And all happened to him was he was thrown over the church.
That's right. His father's wife.
Like
right. He was thrown out. He wasn't stoned, correct.
But
if that man's wife took him to court, that's a whole different thing.
But see, what you're saying there is like there's cases in court and Cork and they're thrown out for technical things.
Yeah.
But that's what you're kind of saying, like.
Nope. Yeah. I'm saying if that, here's a man living with his father's wife, okay? That's his mother-in-law. And, in 1 Corinthians chapter 5.
You said father or mother-in-law?
His stepmother. I'm sorry. I'm trying to race here, trying to get through.
Are we off the track here?
Yes, we're way off track, but let me finish this, all right? When he's with his stepmother, he's living and he's very intimate with his stepmother, and they're kicked out. Now, if somebody who is in that situation wants to take him to court, they could. That's not the problem. The church was not going to be involved in going around and taking people to court. They were just going to kick him out of church. If somebody wanted to take him to court, do it. But as far as justice in a church, the justice is you're out. You're not going to be part. Because, Dan, where we were talking about yesterday, where does it say, let it not be once named among you? Where is that?
Ephesians chapter 3 or 4.
Okay, let's go to Ephesians chapter 4.
Yeah, Ephesians 5:3.
Is it 5:3? Okay. Look in verse 2. Ephesians 5:2. And walk in love as Christ also had loved us and had given himself for an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet smelling savor. He died. But fornication, adultery, and all uncleanness or covetousness, let it not be once named among you as becometh saints, neither filthiness in our words, nor foolish talking, nor jesting, which are not convenient, but rather giving of thanks. For this ye know, that no whoremonger, nor unclean person, nor covetous man who is an idolater hath any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God. So they don't belong. So the church is just keeping people out. But we're not setting up a court system like the Catholics did in the Dark Ages. in burning at the stake anybody who's sinned. We deliver them over to Satan, and we let the government deal with them. If somebody wants to take them to court, let them take them. The church is not going to come and say, like the Catholics do, oh, have mercy on them, have mercy. Let them deal with it in court. If somebody wants justice, let them have it. Teach them mercy, but don't demand mercy when justice should be served. I know this is very complicated. I'm in a foreign country. I'm in a country that has lost its way as far as justice. They all have been taught from their earliest days for the last 200 years, you know, be nice, love, have mercy. But there is justice. There is. Without abuse, there is justice. And we've got to learn that. We did that when we did our, you should have been in here in 2011 where we had our debate on the capital punishment, on the death penalty. It was excellent. Because we looked at both sides, and it was a whole semester on it. It was one of our favorite classes.
Yeah, you never said one that debate.
We did. Because Martin.
Because it went through all the things.
Martin.
I actually have it written down. I just,
Martin,
it was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, you did.
All right, quickly.
Sorry.
I'm sorry, I can't
what
answer all of them.
What does that mean? No jesting. What does that mean?
Making a fool of somebody else. Making a fool. To jest means to make fool of things that are holy or are clean. It'd be like blasphemy.
Okay,
if I made a fool out of you.
I'm foolish talking.
Now, again, talking like a fool. Talking like an unsaved kid.
Or, sorry, because I'm going, I fool around.
I know. We know what we mean, but the words in their literal, remember what Job said to his wife. He said, you talk like a foolish woman. You talk like an unbeliever is what he's saying.
Right.
Call no man a fool, which means don't say somebody's an unbeliever unless you really know. All right, that's the point. So no foolish talking. Don't talk like a fool.
So I can still continue.
You can continue to make fun of your pastor as long as he can make fun of you.
I'm just thinking, I literally got a shock the other day, so I'll keep it on. Move back.
All right, we got to get down to E very quickly. Number two says, God the husband will have to judge, and he judges. Number three, even if they come back. And they come back to God sporadically, but usually only because they're hungry. In John chapter 6, why were the people following Jesus?
Hungry.
Free food. So God's going to take away what she has taken for granted, and all that Israel had actually had came from her husband and not from her lovers. She says, they're going to give me my bread and water. And God says, I give you wine and gold and silver. Why is that more important? God will expose just how stupid she has been, will stop all the joyous occasions, and God will visit or bring upon her all his wrath. Isn't that true in your life? When you backslide or you get into sin, what does the Lord do? He takes away all joy.
Yep.
There's no. If you're saved, you will not have joy in sin. D. What God would rather do, fill in rather. In that day, God would rather, notice that word, in that day, it repeats itself through the minor prophets. Speaking of the day of Jezreel, the Armageddon. In that day, God will be sweet to Israel. He will allure her, draw her back near to himself. He will speak comfortably to her in the wilderness. You know, when Israel is running from the Antichrist, God's going to speak to them comfortably. Not harshly, even though they've been away from him for so long. He will give her gifts, a door of hope. He will hear her sing, just as the day when they were first married. He will hear her call him my husband, which is Ishi. And your Bible's filled with Hebrew words and things. And no longer will just see him as an evil lord, Baali. You hear that word Baal in there? Mm-hmm. All right, so Baal means lord. Baali means my lord. Isn't that funny? A husband? Yeah. Genesis chapter 17, you know what Sarah calls Abraham?
Lord.
But she calls him Adonai. Adonai, which means the Lord. And there you got 1 Peter chapter 3. It says, be like Sarah, who called her husband Lord, which just simply means the boss. Not the dictator or anything, but listen, I'm going to, how do we joke? He says, George, I'll get back to you in a minute. As soon as I talk to the boss. Talk to the wife. Well, wouldn't it be interesting if a woman said that? I mean, nobody would tolerate that today.
Mm.
But that's how it was. It was a right area of respect. And God says, you won't call. I mean, this was a demonic. It's my Lord, but this kind of Lord is an evil Lord. How are they talking about God? Oh, he's such a cruel Lord. He ruins my life. He has all these rules against me.
Mm.
That's how they talked about God and his laws. And he says, God won't let me have any fun. He's my Baali. He's my Lord. No, Adonai is the right way to call him. He's the one who knows best. So he plays on two different words. Yes, sir?
Just trying to get my head. She called him Lord, but they don't use the actual word Adonai in the text. Just the actual English word Lord. Is that right?
Where? What? Who's the she? In your
Sarah.
Sarah. Genesis chapter 17. It is Adonai. It's Lord. Small L, small O, small R, small B.
Oh, yeah, it's not Adonai.
Right. I'm just telling you.
But in this here, then it's.
It's Baali. And they use the word to let you know it's a different word.
I was wondering,
okay. Because if it just says, you'll call me Lord.
Because it's all Lord, and sometimes the context doesn't really.
Nope, it doesn't. Right. But you'll always know this in the Old Testament when it's L-O-R-D. That's Adonai. I know you don't want to learn Greek or Hebrew, but sometimes it's just kind of fun to stretch your brain. If it's capital L, capital O, capital R, capital D, what is that?
Jehovah.
Okay? So your Bible does help you know.
Yeah.
That's Adonai, and that's Jehovah. Okay, but here it doesn't let you see that word there. He uses Baali, and then he uses the word Lord to let you know that when it's Baali, it's evil Lord. He's a mean daddy.
Yeah, it's specific and it's strong. And it's
and it helps you to realize. You know, when I got before I got saved, I thought God was cruel. God was mean. God wouldn't let these Christians have fun. After I got saved, I went, man, he's the best thing that ever happened to me. I'm glad he has some rules. I'm glad he tells me what is right and what is wrong. All right, faster, 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 faster. So what God would rather do, he would rather hear her call him my husband, no more, and he'd rather her get rid of the memory of all her previous lovers. What did God ask the Jews to do with the pictures and with all of the idols that they used to worship?
Tear them down.
Tear them down and never mention their names again. Let them, you know what, a lot of the gods of Canaan were completely forgotten until about the 1800s. Nobody knew some of these wicked sexual gods and the names that were associated until they went digging them up and found them and says, oh, look, here's the god to Astaroth. And it was a vile, wicked, you wouldn't want to look at the pictures of these things. There they were bringing up those names that had been forgotten for 1,500 years. Yes, sir?
But sir, it's not good to, you know, to look back our life before.
It's really not. You need to forget some things. Forgetting those things which are behind.
How do you give your testimony, Pastor?
Well, you give your testimony. But, you know, I've had people give their testimony and they go into so much detail. Mm. All it does is defile everybody listening to them. It's just everybody's going, you did that and you had 17. And when they get to Christ, you're like, oh, I got to go to the altar and get clean now, man. You don't need all that stuff. You don't want to, I'm not touching their hand. That guy was, skip it over, man. Bury it and say, I once was lost. That's, you know, and you can give some detail, but some of that stuff doesn't need to be repeated.
Amen. You don't need to do that, Pastor, because it's not testimony.
That's right. It's not.
I get saved, and now this is why I'm confirmed what Christ has done and doing in my life.
Amen.
Because all that other detail, I won't go into it now, but there was one guy. He was glorifying.
Oh, yeah. He's glorifying sin instead of the Savior.
Papa gave his testimony, and he said, I possibly did talk to someone put the net.
He talked about I murdered, yes, but he's not actually going to. And I took him by the throat, and I cut his throat, and I ripped his mouth. You don't need that kind of detail. I just say, I was a drug addict. Good. All right, that's all I need to know. So, make a covenant of peace with nature. Things are going to get back right now. And isn't it true? We are the sickest people on the planet. Nature is against humans. No matter how many drugs they come up with, we're killing ourselves faster and faster. God's going to turn around and nature's going to get along with us. It's going to stop warfare. Going to start all over again with Israel. Going to remarry her. All of this applies to the nation of Israel. And they marry again Jehovah. We don't have time. Zechariah 13 says it. But it also applies to the Gentiles, as Barry said, that the verses apply to us. We get back in. Hey, remember the parable of the two sons. The older son stays home, and the younger son, give me my inheritance, and goes off, and he wastes his living. Was he a son of the father? Yes or no?
Yes.
The son gets his wits and comes home broke, empty, nothing. And when he comes back, The father is waiting for him, greets him, falls on his neck, welcomes, "My son, which was dead, is alive again." What does the older son think? "It's not fair. It's not right." What does the father say? "Everything I have is yours, but your son who was dead and now alive, shall we not rejoice at that?" What is the son a picture of? Is it the picture of an unsaved person getting saved? No, it's a picture of the Gentiles coming back to God. See, the Jews are going, "Who these Gentiles are? They think they could just come back home?" Yes, they can. We can come right back into a relationship with God. That's the picture. All right, we got to stop there. Well, at least we got two chapters done. We're in trouble. All right, you have a 2-minute break.